Hey guys, what is going on? We are in the zone. This is episode 206 today. I am here as always with Giancarlo Aulino. And today we got to start it off with some controversial takes because, you know, Aulino, over the years, when we were younger, we used to look forward to these weekends, the All-Star weekends, the jerseys, the 5-on-5 game, just seeing who could showcase their skills. But in this case nowadays, when you look at the skills competition, I feel like it's just all flair, no end result. It's just a disaster. It's all about marketability. They're bringing in props. They're bringing in old time memories. What were your thoughts on this, Aulino? Were you at all entertained by this, or was this just like how Trevor Zegras put it on Twitter, a snooze fest?
Oh, I don't disagree, I guess, with him. I think he's probably going to get a fine from Gary next week, but this was bad. Like, I feel so bad for the media that had to cover that and actually sit through that in the arena. Like, I'm so thankful that I can change a channel when I did, because that was the cringiest thing I've ever seen. Like, they've gone overboard now. They need to like go through the whole department. I don't know who's in charge of the All-Star weekend. They need to go to a different department, not lose their job. Obviously times are tough, but they need to be relocated in the NHL department, like somewhere else far away from this type of event. This was something where I saw the cringiest stuff play out in front of our eyes, and I couldn't believe I was watching an NHL All-Star weekend when I saw the skills competition include, like you said, just props that didn't make any sense. And it was just like they're trying to show that they're not robots and like, oh, we can have fun. We have personality. Didn't come off on TV that way. So they need an overhaul. Gary Bettman, I think, should go and call up WWE, call Vince McMahon, call creative and say, how do you market your stars? We want to market our superstars so like that our league can gain ratings, because even on ESPN, their ratings have gone down like 22% was the last stat I saw. So overall, they need an overhaul in marketing. This is bad.
Yeah, I watched the fastest skater, because you know the traditional skills like the accuracy and the speed, like the fastest skater, I think that's really good because you can't really change it. They're just skating in a circle, seeing who's the fastest. I've always liked that. I think, you know, what we saw last night from Svechnikov, if you told me Svechnikov was the fastest skater, I probably would laugh at you, but here we are. He has wheels. It exposes how great a guy Svechnikov could be. You look at McDavid, what he did, like he had four targets in 9 seconds and the guy doesn't even win it. Brock Nelson, I guess now this makes sense, Aulino, because Brock Nelson somehow getting 30 goals every year in the island with the Islanders, I guess this shows that he's a good shooter. So, you know, in that regard, it's good because they're exposing the NHL talent that we never thought would be. Like, I never thought ever Brock Nelson would be the most accurate shooter. I never thought Svech would be the fastest skater. But here we are. We got, you know, Mitch Marner doing the whole Miami Vice. We got David Pastrnak doing Happy Gilmore. We got, I mean, the Sarah Nurse thing was pretty cool. I thought, you know, mixing in one of your brightest women's hockey players into the All-Star weekend is good, but at the same time, doesn't really belong there. But at the end of the day, I do agree with you. I think it makes sense how they're trying to make these players have charisma and chemistry and a character. But at the same time, Aulino, for years, I want to say like 30 plus years, the NHL has been known to be robotic. And you know what? That's okay, because they don't really have to have character. They're going out there and they're putting a puck in the net. There's not a lot of time to talk on a mic. And it just comes off as awkward. Like, I don't know if you were watching. I was watching some of the pressers. Like, Jack Hughes looks awkward as hell. Mikko Rantanen and Barkov just, like, they look awkward as hell too. So the only guy that I feel like has the chemistry, and he's had it for years, is Ovechkin. You know, you have a couple, like, P.K. Subban was born to do that, what he's doing now and covering and doing all that. But other than that, I agree with you. This was too gimmicky. It's too forced. Just play 5-on-5. Go back to what's been working for 30 plus years. If it is being robotic, then that's how it is. Dude, for the longest time, how many times have we said, Sidney Crosby doesn't say much? Well, he doesn't have to say much because his game does all the talking. that's the whole point of hockey. So at the end of the day, Alino, I was even talking to Nick last night. You look at the NHL 22 and NHL 23 covers on NHL, like the games, like they're trying to, they're bringing beach balls and like just the background and Photoshop. Like, dude, just cut all that shit out. Just put the player on the freaking cover that won the Art Ross or whatever, have them selling, and that's it. Like, it's not that hard. They got to go back to simplicity. That's what works in the NHL. But hey, they're clearly trying to compare themselves to the NBA. And by the way, last year, the NBA, that all-star skills stuff was also horrible. So the dunk contest, I don't know what the hell they're going to do, because all I see is we need Aaron Gordon, we need John Morant, we need Zion. But guess what? They get Derrick Jones Jr. and they get some other random guy that no one wants to see. So at the end of the day, these skills, man, I think it's gone way too far. I know nowadays society is becoming a little more experimental, but man, it just, for me, just stick to simplicity. That's just what works.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if you want to include them, like, I have no problem with them bringing in the women's players in there because it gives them a platform for their league. But also, like, why don't you just do that in a game instead of a skills competition? Like, why don't you have them on, like, let's say Team Lindros, Team Sundin, like they do at the Hall of Fame weekend? Why don't you put that on TV as part of the All-Star weekend? They get a collection of, like, retired players in the NHLPA or even, like, women's hockey players. You do, like, a fantasy draft. You put them on the night before, have fastest skater in between periods and hardest shot, accurate shot in between the second and third, and go from there. Like, what we saw yesterday, though, like, I do not, like, I don't know what to make of it. For Gary Bettman, like, imagine him going into a meeting and try to sell an international TV deal with, like, any other country and, like, this is what the game has to offer. They'll probably, like, just leave. Like, thanks for your time. We're going to see what the NBA is doing. Thanks. It was nice knowing you. We're not interested in the NHL.
As well, man, you said it before we went live. You know, they're down 22% in terms of, the views on TV. Yeah. It just shows, though, like, I've known since I was a little kid, I'll, you know, that hockey is not number one in America, and it never will be. So I think we need to start accepting that. I know there's a lot of accounts out there that say, well, hockey's on the rise, or NASCAR is, you know, more watched than hockey. Well, yeah, you're in America. Like, NASCAR, football, basketball, those things are all ahead of hockey. Even soccer nowadays, I see soccer really creeping up in the States. The MLS is doing a fantastic job. But with hockey, I think they're just trying to force this different product that nobody's getting into. And I think it starts, like you mentioned, Alino, marketability and exploitation. If you're, like, let's say you're a casual guy and you're at my house and we're shooting the shit and I put on the NHL All-Star Weekend and you've never watched hockey before, you're going to see that and you're going to be like, what the hell is the NHL in terms of structure and how does the regular season work? Because it just looks like a disaster. Alino, I got to say this because I've been ranting this whole pod so far, and I'm sorry, but seeing Mikko Rantanen do the target thing and he hits the four targets, and you see Sidney Crosby getting dumped into the tank, I never thought in my life I would see Sidney Crosby openly participate in something of that nature. So to me, it's just an absolute circus. That's the perfect word to describe it. It's just a circus. And now today's the All-Star game. What are they doing? Four games or three on three? Like, get rid of that shit, man. Just go to 5-on-5. There's two jerseys. Have 16 skaters on each. Call it a day. I can't talk about this anymore. I'm getting too heated.
They are probably like, thank God we're in Florida. They're counting down the hours. Like, oh, tomorrow's a beach day. Let's get the hell out of this rink and get out of here. But, like, imagine if it was back in the day when Gretzky's the face of the league that everybody identifies with, and you have, like, some winger on another team who's, like, probably the 15th to 20th best player in the world shooting at a target and dunking the guy that you're marketing as a top player in the sport into a tank. Unbelievable. That's the NHL for you.
Yeah, like, the only positive thing here is just Ovi and Crosby just being intertwined and people just knowing that these two guys are probably going to retire the same, maybe not the same time, maybe actually, yeah, probably in the same year, they'll probably retire. Their careers are just intertwined with each other. Dude, they're literally like 4 points apart all time, which is just wild. So I think the fact that they really took advantage of marketing Ovi and Crosby as that duo, I think that was the only positive of the whole weekend. And of course, I really thought the goalies always in these events, Alino, they just come off as just being there to be there. They're not really doing much, like the breakaway challenge or letting goals in. Like, there's really not a lot that the goalies do here. And I think they got to change that. I think I remember, Alino, call me crazy, I think it was 2011. Do you remember when they did that shootout? It was like every player goes and they shoot and they tally how many goals the goalies let in. Because I remember that. I think it was Lundqvist, Fleury, and I think it was Quick. And they were actually going all out. Like, they were not letting any goals in. And I think they got to go back to that, because like yesterday we saw Sorokin and Shesterkin have the lowest point total. And they're arguably the two best goalies in the world. So they got to change. Again, here's another critique. They got to change something with the goalies. I just think this weekend, like you said, major overhaul. They got to do so much to change it. I'll say this one last time before we move on. Simplicity is just what matters in the NHL. I think the more simple things are, I think just the easier it transitions to success. And I just think you got to keep it status quo, as boring as that may seem. But before we move on, we got to change another thing, Alino, because Sidney Crosby, he mentions, you know, this whole wild card stuff and the divisional games and the 2-3, you have the freaking Leafs are in the dungeon every single year because they got to face Tampa or Boston. But then there's good old Sidney Crosby, finally real, keeping it real, real, recognized real, saying he wants to change the format back to 1-8. What are your thoughts on this? And do you think this will make the NHL a little bit more unpredictable?
Yeah, I think I agree with it. And I'll credit Gary Bettman for one thing. Like, at least he experimented with it, that going with like a wild card and just all that. But that was also 10 years ago or 11 years ago that they did that. So obviously we've seen, and probably around 2017, 18, at the start, it was good. Like, we saw St. Louis and Chicago go at it, but once you see the quality kind of diminish a little bit as each round goes on, and the best like quality of plays in the first round, probably should change the format and reward some of these teams that, you know, go all out and try to get that top spot and not just flounder and hope to get a wild card spot. So I think Crosby's right here. I think 1-8, if they really want to keep the division, only keep two divisions. They had three in the past, and we saw like a weaker team get the third seed when they would really be the seventh seed. So that's one thing I would change. Go 1-8 and then give them the top two division leaders, get 1 and 2, and the rest go wherever they go. So going forward, I think that's what the NHL needs to go back to.
Yeah, very 2005. Like, I love that. I think, you know, you look, I remember it was 2011, Alino, when the Devils made that run. The Kings made that run. The Kings were the eighth seed. They were battling hard to make the playoffs. I think, Alino, when you're an eighth seed, you're just more motivated to really do damage. Like we saw with the Kings in 2011, they ran through everybody as the eighth seed, knocking out Vancouver, knocking out all the really good teams. They decimated Phoenix at the time in the conference final. Do you think if they were to change the format next year, and let's say an eighth seed is Washington or Pittsburgh, do you think that really motivates the eighth seed more? Because we're looking the last couple of years, the eighth, let's say, okay, the last wild card team, I don't think a single series has gone in favor of that wild card position. So do you think now when you look at the standings, you see instead of wild card 1, 2, 3, you see 8, 9, 10, 11. Do you think that motivates teams more at the end of the year? Because what we're seeing, Alino, and I don't know if you've noticed this, but I think from about November to January, the NHL has become a lot more watered down. Teams don't necessarily care for specific matchups on the schedule just because of the NHL, the playoff format. So I think once we see February to April come, if they change us to 1-8, and you're looking at the standings, oh shit, we're in ninth, we need to win these games. I think once a team that's in eighth, they go to the playoffs, oh shit, if I'm the first seed, I don't know if I want to play that team.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what's kind of missing. I know in the past when like the Leafs would go and they have that hope that maybe they can get to eighth and they would come in ninth, and teams like Carolina, New Jersey, Philly for a little bit, like they're battling for just the eighth seed, seventh seed. And the only two spots I would really change were 7 and 8, and the top six, they would just play whatever and not really try. So I know that's probably why they changed it to the wild card, but at the end of it, like, you're seeing some of these playoff matchups that make no sense. Like Toronto, Tampa, they wouldn't be playing each other if it was 1-8. They would probably be in the second round matched up. So it kind of takes away the advantage of playing hard in the regular season if you know you're going to get that kind of matchup in the first round. And maybe they want to change it. Like, if they go 1-16 and they just have everybody's ranking involved, that might take away like how teams play throughout the year. A single elimination, I think, would be interesting if they want to bring up TV ratings. I don't know if they would do that, go away from the traditional 7-game, but if it was like the NFL where win or go home, and that's the incentive to get home ice, maybe the rating would go up a bit, but I don't think it would be too much for them wanting to change the format. So I think they should go back to 1-8. Maybe as one thing they could change, whoever the home team is in any playoff series gets to decide whether they want the traditional 2-2 and then get the game 7, or start off 3 at home and then go to the road. So that could be something they experiment with, I think, going forward.
Yeah, like there's a lot of different things that they can go here. I think the 1-16 is not an ideal thing, just because, again, you said, if you're in second, third place, and let's say you're in second or third all year, at the end of the road, like from March to April, they're probably going to be stringing up some losses because, again, they're just resting. They're not really trying. But again, you earn your spot in the conference, in the standings. If you're in first place all year, like look at Boston right now. They've been just an absolute machine. They deserve everything. If they're going to take a couple games off, so be it. They've lost like 10 games all season. We're in freaking February. It's ridiculous what they're doing. But I do agree with everything you've said. I think when you go and you think of 1-8, you maybe bring back the 3 divisions. You probably have, I don't know, like let's say you consist of a division like Detroit, Florida, a couple other teams. Florida would probably be that team that gets the 3rd seed. And then, of course, you look at like 7, 8, 9 will probably be teams like New Jersey, the Islanders, the Rangers, the Penguins all battling for that final playoff spot. So that would, I think, just be must-see alone. The single knockout, I don't know if that would work in the NHL just because of, again, I think when we talk about playoff hockey, Alino, and how hard it is to win the Stanley Cup, it's because you got to go through about 20 games to win it. So I think I've always loved the Game 7s, the 7-game series. I would not change that, but other than that, I think 1-8 is definitely something we need to rethink because it has been a while since we've done that. But got to move on now to some more drama because that's all the NBA is now, Alino. It's just a drama fest. We'll start it off because yesterday, I mean, the trade deadline is fast approaching. We all know that. The trade deadline in the NBA is like, it's just a freaking clusterfuck. Everyone gets dealt. Everyone just, the whole league just changes in the blink of an eye. But we got to talk about one team, and we've been talking about this team, Alino, for 2 years in a row now, and it's Brooklyn again. Now, they've been stringing up wins and stringing up losses after Kevin Durant got injured, and Kyrie Irving, that beautiful teammate, the guy that everybody loves in the locker room, comes out yesterday and requests a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. Now, I know Brooklyn, I understand they offered him a 4-year max deal, but I don't know if he wants to stay in Brooklyn for 4 years, Alino. If you're Kyrie Irving, not only does this hurt your reputation, I mean, his reputation's already shot after what he did to going to Boston and then dipping after a year. But if you're a team out there, which team do you think best fits Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, just first on Kyrie, like, I'm not surprised. Like, I'm sure Kevin Durant must have had it in the back of his mind, and I guess Kevin Durant did it first. He probably tried to avoid the situation in the summer. It didn't work out for him because Brooklyn, rightfully so, wanted a lot for the guy they've been targeting all those years. So I see why they didn't do it. But Kyrie now comes out and says he wants to get traded, and at the worst possible time, like, why don't you just go through the playoff run? Your team's like turned it around since the coaching change. Just stick with it. And in the offseason, him and KD can meet with that GM and say, you guys can rebuild now, trade us both, get as many draft picks as you can, and do a nice exit. But this is not going to do good for just the local market. I don't think they care, obviously, but I think the Lakers are going to emerge here as the suitor. And I know I mentioned this before the season, but Russell Westbrook going the other way and KD and him might not like each other, but they're going to have to learn to get along. And I can see this benefiting them both. You have KD, Russell Westbrook, you have Ben Simmons there. I'd be interested to see how they can just coexist for 3 months. If it doesn't work, they tried, but I think that's the way to go. Reunion for LeBron and Kyrie Irving, reunion for KD and Russell Westbrook.
It's funny too, because I was talking to my brother yesterday about it, and the three teams right now that are the favorites to land him are the Lakers, the Mavericks, and the Heat. Now, but when I talk about the Mavericks, they don't really have, I think, enough draft capital and stock on players to get Kyrie Irving. Like, who are you trading? Dinwiddie going back to Brooklyn? I don't think Dinwiddie wants to go back to Brooklyn after how they treated him. I think Miami is an intriguing fit for Kyrie Irving, but Cazalino, like, let's talk about it for a second. Eric Spoelstra is one of those coaches where I think he can straighten out almost any player. We saw last year he got into that verbal spat with Jimmy Butler, and ever since then, Jimmy Butler has really smartened up as a teammate and as a leader. He was always a great leader, but sometimes Butler would get too vocal, and I think this is where Spoelstra said, hey, I'm in charge here. You're getting paid to play on the court. You're not making plays. You're not running any of that. I'm the guy in charge. I think somehow, dude, if Miami can get Kyrie Irving, you have him with Jimmy Butler, you have him with Bam Adebayo. Yeah, probably Tyler Hero, Nikola Jovic, and a first have to go the other way. But I'm sorry. I think just the way I've seen Tyler Hero, he's a bucket. Don't get me wrong, but his defensive game is just not there. If they really want to be in contention, Alino, with a Milwaukee team, with a Boston team, I think you start with a big three in Kyrie, Butler, and Bam, and you go from there. But I do like the Lakers pick. I think with Russell Westbrook being a free agent at the end of the season, it's probably going to be a rental. They're probably going to get a first-round pick as well. And I wouldn't be surprised, Alino, if they try and get somebody else, the Nets, and as well the Lakers get Joe Harris as well in the deal. Because if you get Joe Harris and Kyrie Irving, that just solves so many problems for the Lakers. They just got Ryu Hachimura. They got Thomas Bryant. They just also have got AD back. So when AD's healthy, that's just a nightmare. He can dominate in the paint. But I think it's going to come down, I think, to Miami and LA. I've heard Giannis say he wants Kyrie. I don't see that happening. But I do like what you said. I think at the end of the day, LeBron is the guy that tampered on Twitter. I think he's the guy that pulls the strings at the end of the day. I could see Kyrie being the guy to go to LA.
Yeah, just imagine, like, after all this, he goes to LA and they don't win. That would be another one. Like, Brooklyn, I would just stick out the year because LA has been a mess all year. And why would you want to risk that so close to a playoff run? Like, I think you should just stick it out for the rest of the season. You already have a good thing now. The East isn't, like, when you're looking at some of the teams there, I think there's a lot of winnable matchups. Like, the Bucks are, they don't look like that dominant team. Like, Giannis is going off every game, but without Middleton giving them that kind of service and some of the other guys having to step up, I think Brooklyn can have an opportunity there to get past them. We saw what happened last year with Boston. If everybody works well together, they can be a unit. I think Brooklyn could push Boston. And obviously, when you're looking at the East, like, you have teams come up that, like Philly, where it's going to go 50-50. But I think Kyrie's chances are a lot better in Brooklyn this season.
Yeah, I agree, man. There's I remember 2 years ago when they lost in Game 7 to the Bucks because of Kevin Durant's foot being on the line. Like, it's just, that's the beauty of basketball. You're that close, but you know, there's no results. So last year, what we saw with the Nets just getting absolutely exposed by Boston's defense. If you really run it back with Kevin Durant, who's been playing phenomenal, he's averaging 30 points a game, like the whole season. You have Kyrie Irving, who's also dropping 27 a game. I think if you just keep it the status quo, and maybe, I think at the end of the day, Alino, I think their most beneficial is getting rid of Ben Simmons somehow, some way. If you can get maybe another good shooter, a better all in all, just more efficient player than Ben Simmons, I think they're rolling, because Ben Simmons still has trade value. He's 25 years old. But I mean, I agree with you. If it's not Miami or LA, just stick it out. I think just stick out the year, see where you can go throughout the playoffs. I mean, you know, I've said this to Nick so many times. You look at the Eastern Conference, the Raptors we'll talk about in a sec. They've been flat out disappointing. The Hawks, I thought, would be well over 500. They're at 500. The Heat haven't looked too good either. Alino, it's really down to 3-4 teams in the Eastern Conference. And who says the Nets can't get lucky and win a series against, let's say, the Sixers or the Bucks? It's just one of those things. So if I'm Kyrie Irving, let's say a team like Dallas comes at me with a trade offer, probably not taking it. If Miami, maybe. But for me, if it's either the Lakers or nothing for me if I'm Kyrie. So we got to move on, though. I want to talk more and more about the Raptors, because this team, man, it's just unpredictable at this point. Since December 8th, Alino, they have lost, I think it's like 19 of 24 games. They've just been on an absolute tailspin in terms of success with the franchise. Fred VanVleet, though, he's been balling recently, so his trade value is definitely going up. Gary Trent Jr.'s trade stock's going up. OG Anunoby, he's like, I don't want to be traded, but everyone knows he's probably going to be one of those guys out. Alino, we have so many questions, but I got to start with Fred VanVleet. Out of all the teams that are kicking to get Freddie, do you think it's Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers, or do you think there's another team out there, a wild card, like maybe Denver, a team that you don't expect?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of teams. I think Toronto's going to take advantage of this. I think they know with OG that, I know there was a report about 3 first-round picks, and get interested, I think, you know what, they actually could get the 3 first-round picks, which would be a really good return. Like, I like OG. OG's been a really good player since they drafted him. I think that was a steal for them at the time, and maybe it's time that he goes, but if they could get a return like this for a player that does what he does, he's effective as a defender, I think they should take it. With Fred VanVleet, he's getting paid a lot of money, and unfortunately the team isn't producing right now. So if you can get rid of his contract, he won a championship, so obviously it's going to be a positive whenever he decides to leave. But I think it's now, like, they should just see what they can get out of him, get the interest from other teams, like a Denver, I think would be a solid fit for VanVleet. With OG, I think they should take their time with that. I think they should maybe go at the Pelicans. I think he'd be a good fit there. See what you can take out of their bench and go from there.
It's crazy, Alino. I heard, I don't know if we would really trade with a division team, but I heard the Knicks really want OG Anunoby. Now, I mean, you look at their team, and they're like two moves away from really being a top six team in the East. I know if Piniella was in this pod, he would shoot me for saying that, but you know, you have Jalen Brunson, who to me is one of the biggest all-star snubs. He's been balling all year. You talk about the contract that they signed him in the offseason. People were saying that's ridiculous money. He's backed it up. He's looking phenomenal. RJ Barrett's a guy that I think, you know, looking more and more like OG in terms of situation. He could be a number two, but right now he's looking more like a 3-4 on the Knicks, where I think at a certain point, Alino, he might get a little disgruntled and maybe he'll request a trade at some point. But you look at the draft capital that the Knicks have. They have the first-round picks. They have Obi Toppin. They have Cam Radish. They have Derrick Rose. They have a lot of guys that I think the Raptors probably would like. But again, if you're the Raptors, I don't know if you're trading OG to the Knicks, a divisional rival at this point. So I like the Pelicans. I heard also Portland is in on OG Anunoby. I think if they can get a Canadian point guard back in Shaedon Sharpe, the guy that they just drafted this offseason in the draft, that's a start. I think I heard, Alino, that instead of draft picks, they want young players to really solidify around Scottie Barnes. But Alino, I don't know if this is really a good source or not. I heard Pascal Siakam might be on the way out. I think that's just dumb as hell. I would not trade a guy like him. Just the way he's been balling all year, last 3-4 years, actually, to be honest with you. Do you see the Raptors? Let's say an enticing offer comes. Let's say there's 4 first-round picks, an A prospect. Do you pull the trigger with Pascal Siakam? Because for me, Scotty Barnes and Siakam are the only untouchables on this team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Scotty Barnes and him, like, it would have to be a big deal. Like, they didn't want to treat Scotty Barnes to get Kevin Durant. That was part of the thing there. So if you're not going to do that, I think you would go with him as your guy. And Pascal Siakam's an all-NBA player. So he's going to demand a lot, or Masai is going to demand a lot to trade him. So it would make sense why they might listen to offers and see how a team, how far they're willing to go. I just think that right now, like Siakam mid-season to trade him, I think it would be kind of crazy. I think that would be like an off-season move. If they want to commit, see where they're drafting. If it's a top five, then maybe. But with the Knicks, I don't know if they want to trade with the Raptors. Like, you saw what Masai did to them the last time when Bargnani went over, and then that pick ended up helping them like down the road get Kawhi. So I don't know if they want to risk that again. If they do, and the Raptors can get Derrick Rose, I'm doing that in a heartbeat. I love Derrick Rose. I'd love to see him in a Raptor uniform before he retires. So that would be a nice sight to see.
Can you imagine the Raptors, dude, somehow get like Derrick Rose, John Wall, and sign Boogie Cousins all in the same trade deadline window? That would be absolutely hilarious. I would love that. I feel like I'm 15 again. But I do agree. Like, this is a time for the Raptors. I'm not going to say it's exciting because you kind of don't know. Oh, there's a little mock trade right there. Yeah,
this one's
Holy crap, that's a lot.
Knicks Muse. Thoughts on this OG mock trade? I just saw this now, created by Knicks Feed. So they're willing to Obi Toppin, Derrick Rose, Washington's projected first, protected from Dallas too. So that's 2 for the Raptors in this year, and then an unprotected in 2024. That's where you get a little risky because we know how the Knicks like to just go off a cliff in any given moment. So the unprotected in 2024, I think that could be the one that seals the deal.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I know OG is not really doing well in terms of offensive production with this team. I mean, why should he be? He's like the fourth option. But if you're telling me you can get a guy in Obi Toppin, who to me is still a really raw talent, we've seen what he can do. He was a top 10 pick. You get Derrick Rose for what, a year, 2 years? I think that alone will excite fans, getting a guy like Derrick Rose on your team. And, you know, to me, it's the third, it's the first. First round pick that I see there. Washington is not that good this year. If that somehow could dip, I think it's protected if it's top five. But let's say it's like the 6th, 7th pick and the Raptors get that. I heard this draft is deep. So if the Raptors can get a 6th, 7th overall guy, that could be a problem. So I if I'm the Raptors, if I'm Masai, I'm really looking at this trade and I'm really thinking, well, how great can Obi Toppin really be? And that's another X factor. Because Obi Toppin, Alina, what we saw him do in college, Jesus Christ, he was looking like Blake Griffin in his prime. So it's definitely iffy. I think if I'm the Knicks, I know it's not a Kyrie Irving, it's not a Kevin Durant, it's not a flashy guy, but you already have RJ Barrett, you have Jalen Brunson, you have Julius Randle playing out of his wig. So now you have OG Anunoby come in here. That's a pretty good starting lineup for the Knicks. Probably one of the better starting lineups since Melo was on the team. So I think it's a win-win, man, honestly. I know a lot of Raptor faithful don't want OG to go, but I think at this point in time, yeah, he's an unreal defensive player, top 10 in steals this season. But if you're going to be dropping, Alino, 14 points a game, he deserves way more than that.
Yeah, this is something where scouting is going to be a big thing. If this draft class is going to be that deep, like, I know everyone's looking at the top pick as like a freak of nature, but if this is going to be one of those draft classes that is kind of similar to ones that we saw like 5-6 years ago, where you have all these young stars come into the league all at once, I think it could be one that Masai looks at and is willing to part with OG Anunoby, with a Fred VanVleet if it means you're getting as many draft picks as possible. Or at the draft, you can also flip them and do something creative. You don't have to pick them all like OKC did and just load up and hope that 2027 is a team and the year that you start a dynasty. So I think this could be something where we might see something special here.
Now, before we go to the Rumble, I just want to quickly talk, because Miles Turner just signed a 2-year deal with the Pacers. That doesn't necessarily mean he's off the hook. And another guy as well, DeAndre Ayton, he's been basically linked to the Mavs. But can you see the Raptors going out there, potentially trading maybe Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. In a package to get Miles Turner or DeAndre Ayton? Because, dude, you look at our center spot, that's the only thing right now I think that we're kind of exposed at.
Yeah, I think if you're going to trade with the Suns, OG would probably be the one to go the other way. Like, they have Chris Paul, so I don't think they'll really have any use there unless they trade Chris Paul, which doesn't seem likely. But I think Ayton didn't want to be there. He clearly, I don't know how much clear he made it by signing an RFA deal right when he had the chance to do it. Like, right as soon as the time was able where he can talk with a team, he literally signed it so fast. And that pretty much says he doesn't want to be there. So Phoenix matching it and him being disgruntled going back and look like he's being forced ever since that whole deal went through, it's not a good recipe for success over there. So I'm even surprised that he did that, because in the playoffs last year, like, Phoenix was looked at as a team that was going to win the championship, and he was one of their guys. So it's going to have to be a return that makes sense for both teams. And if the Raptors come calling, I think that would make sense. OG goes to a team there where he can be used more, and Ayton goes to a team where he can be the center. So that would probably make sense if it's Phoenix.
I think, Alino, if we were to go out and get a Miles Turner, I just think our team would be ridiculous. Like, we wouldn't be at this point, we wouldn't be a playoff team, but like, it would be a trade like what happened with Indiana and the Kings last trade deadline when they got traded Haliburton for Sabonis. It's like, this is a complete culture shock. I feel like if we were to get a Miles Turner, maybe trade VanVleet or Trent Jr. the other way, because I've heard Buddy Hield has wanted out for the longest time in Indiana. Maybe Buddy Hield, it's a 3-team deal. He goes somewhere else. Gary Trent replaces Buddy Hield. We get Miles Turner. Holy shit. That would be absolutely, I think, monumental for not only for Miles Turner, but for guys like Scottie Barnes and Pascal, who have played the five at times this year and have just gotten absolutely bodied all over the court. So they play their respected positions. We might start seeing results sooner than we thought with the Raptors, but got to move on, buddy, to the Royal Rumble. I thought this pay-per-view was freaking phenomenal. I mean, storytelling-wise, there were obviously a couple blunders in this at this event. I thought the women's championship match was very disappointing. Obviously, it had its spots. But I want to start it off, Alino, with the one that kicked it off was the men's Royal Rumble. I was a little bit, not appalled, but I was surprised that this match opened the show. What were your thoughts on the men's Royal Rumble, Alino? Because damn, were those final 10 minutes a freaking spectacle.
Yeah, this whole men's Royal Rumble starting the show kind of gave that vibe like, okay, we might not be seeing The Rock here. So that was a little bit of a letdown that they started the show like that. But I think Cody winning it, this is a problem, I think, with WWE here, that they put themselves in a corner because they booked the whole Royal Rumble match off an injury angle again. Like, we've seen this in the past, and with Edge, with Triple H, with Cena, the guy comes back to win it.
So many times.
And you know it. It's too predictable, and you forget about the storyline that's dominating on television, and the crowd, while that guy's out, they go and latch on to someone else and they rally behind them. We saw with Kofi, we saw Daniel Bryan. They backed themselves in a corner here. Like, I know Sami Zayn was a guy there. He wasn't even in the match. But when you see the crowd, the way they reacted to him, that's one that if he won the Royal Rumble, that would have been a special moment there. So I don't think Cody needed to win it. He could have won Money in the Bank in July and then won the title at SummerSlam. So they backed themselves in a corner, I think, even though the match is going to be good. But the storyline everyone's interested in is a bloodline, and Cody Rhodes has nothing to do with that right now.
I agree, man. Perfectly. You said it perfectly here. I mean, there were so many instances in the Rumble match where you know, we're starting maybe for 1 to 10. I'm like, okay, Cody has to come out soon. Like, he has to be at least in this match. I mean, now that he was scheduled and everybody knew he was in it and advertised and it was announced, I think Cody should have been in about maybe the 8th entrant, the 10th entrant, something along those lines, just to really get the fans behind him. I mean, if Cody was in it for as long as maybe Gunther was, I think the reaction would have been a lot different. But the fact that Gunther, man, he started the Rumble and he went all the way to the end. They really booked the super. They really made him look like a main event bona fide superstar. And Gunther to me, Alino, call me crazy. After everything we saw in this pay per view with Sammy, with Roman, with KO, with Jay, with all the big names, Gunther to me was the highlight of the whole pay per view. And this is not the first time. Clash of the Castle, Gunther was also the superstar at that pay per view. So I just commend him with the amount of work he's put in. Look at his body now. He's so lean. He's shedded so much weight. You see he's motivated. Imperium has always been a problem. But the fact that WWE goes in here, they make him the number one entrant, and he goes all the way to the end. And almost, I mean, it felt like, Alino, call me crazy, it felt like the crowd was behind Gunther more than Cody Rhodes, and they should have been. He was the number one entrant in it the whole way. I think Cody Rhodes being at 30, that just did not help him going over whatsoever.
Yeah, he should have won way earlier. I agree with you there. Like, if you know he's in the match, it's like he was a surprise entrant. Yeah. Like, they've been promoting it for the last month, so they should have just had him in at like 15, 16, like somewhere in the middle, have him have to rally back a little bit, maybe toss over Bobby Lashley early in the match. But Gunther was a story here. The crowd went crazy when they found out Sheamus and him were going to start. Like, they set the tone early.
Yeah, that was great.
Poor Miz gets thrown out first. And then that moment there with Brock and Bobby Lashley, and then Brock snaps and gets his steps and just breaks a table almost. Scares the shit out of Michael Cole and then leaves. And Baron Corbin's coming out. He makes sure to run over, tackle him, and fall down. So that was hilarious. They got to do something there, though, where if you're going to have Baron Corbin in that kind of spot, like, he has a manager like JBL. Like, what's the deal with him? They need to have more clarity on his character, because he looks like he's getting lost in the shuffle there. But it's nice to see how they promoted Gunther in this spot as the Intercontinental Champion and made him seem more important.
Yeah, and Alino, doesn't it kind of remind you of how they did it with Dean Ambrose back in 2016? Like, he was the Intercontinental Champion, and he was a finalist. And people thought, okay, can Dean actually take Roman Reigns' title from him and go into WrestleMania? Maybe he'll lose the IC title on, like, a SmackDown, and then you have, you know, Dean Ambrose hold the main title at Mania. But, dude, Gunther, to me, easily is winning the Rumble. Like, I don't know when in his career, but he's winning the Rumble at some point. He looked so dominant. I agree with you. Like, they missed a big opportunity with Gunther and Brock. I think they really could have hit a home run there with that. But I think the whole story with Brock was, of course, Bobby Lashley getting the better of him, throwing him out in surprisingly quick fashion. And we're going to see Brock versus Bobby at Mania, which is one of your biggest dream matches. So that's going to be fun. But I got to talk more about another thing that went down at the Royal Rumble and in that match. And, dude, Logan Paul, the guy, I don't know what it is. He's athletic as hell. That spot with Ricochet was phenomenal. But the big, big story coming out of it with Logan Paul was he eliminated Seth Rollins. Now, when you eliminate Seth Rollins in a Royal Rumble, we all know what that leads to. Yes, you know, Seth Rollins is in the chamber for the United States title. He's not winning it, obviously. Do we see Logan Paul versus Seth Rollins at WrestleMania? And, dude, call me crazy, can that blow the roof off the place?
Yeah, I think we're going to see it. I think, like, Logan Paul, I think, was campaigning for that John Cena match, and it looks like he's going to be facing Austin Theory. So if John Cena's out, you look at some of the next options. He already faced The Miz. They had that program at last Mania with Ray. Maybe Seth Rollins now. They look at that's the top one on the list. Get the most eyes on the match and just the whole build-up, what they're doing with his character right now. He's not really a heel. He's more of a face now since turning a couple months back. So I think it does make sense. Logan Paul can go at Seth Rollins as a heel, because I don't think I thought that was a stupid decision to begin with, making him a babyface, but looks like he's a heel now, and Seth can go in on him being a reality guy or a YouTuber influencer, and they can have a good match. I think, I don't know if they'll steal the show, because I think there's going to be another match there that's going to really get people invested. Whatever Sami Zayn's involved with, Roman, Cody, that's going to get a lot of the headlines. And I think this one, if it's on night one, I think it could be, depending on what other matches, might be a co-main event there. So I think they're going to be in a good spot regardless.
Now, this is by no means a WrestleMania preview, but I mean, do you see Seth Rollins losing to Logan Paul, or do you think Logan Paul is taking the pin here?
I would like to see Seth get the win. He's been a trooper, doing everything there. Last year, he took the loss there to Cody. He lost him even in the Hell in a Cell match when Cody had the torn pec, and you could have had Seth take him out, and they could have picked it up right again at Royal Rumble, and those two could have wrestled at Mania again, but they didn't do that. Seth took the loss again, and he even did the match with Riddle. He took the loss there, so they could do something here. I think they could reward Seth, give him the win over Logan Paul. If Logan Paul does get the win, he's probably going to have someone come out there, help him out. So I don't think it'll be a clean finish win if Logan Paul gets it.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to quickly talk more about the pay-per-view before we cut it out here. Bray Wyatt and LA Knight, what were your thoughts on that match? Because the build was months in the making, and then to me, I don't know, man. The match to me felt very, very short, underwhelming. Didn't like the gimmick at all, the highlighter glow sticks and all that. But what were your thoughts on Bray Wyatt's basically first in-ring match in a long time? And what do you think about this Uncle Howdy and Bray Wyatt allegiance?
Oh, Jeff Hardy watching that must have been thrilled, just watching everyone glow in the dark, watching the face paint glow of Bray Wyatt. I think that was a nice little touch there, but that match, it would have been nice to see it. I saw more of their outfit than the actual match itself, because the whole arena and stadium was black, and I guess they lived up to the name of a pitch black match, but that was bad. Uncle Howdy at the end, nice little spot. Looks like they could continue with Bray and Uncle Howdy, Bo Dallas over there. I'd like to see Eric Rowan come back. I think he deserves it, back in the fold with Bray. But we saw Alexa Bliss. It looks like they're slowly working that angle on a different show, so like that one eventually when she joins them, it'll make sense and won't be out of the blue. But I hope LA Knight doesn't get lost in the shuffle, because he stole the whole build up to this. They were building up Bray at the start, but every week when LA Knight comes out, starts cutting an amazing promo, he stole the show. He stole the show there with The Undertaker. That was a nice moment. That great promo has a crowd invested the whole time. So I hope he's not just in a battle royal at WrestleMania. He deserves to get a matchup with somebody. Like, they have 3 months now, or two, because it's going to be in April, but they got 2 months, build them up in a nice feud, and give him a moment at WrestleMania. I think he deserves it.
Yeah, perfectly said there. LA Knight, to me, has been one of the bigger surprises of SmackDown the last 2 months, just going toe-to-toe with Bray, basically outperforming him on the mic. It does wonders, specifically. Like, if you were to tell me in a month you put LA Knight against Gunther, I would not say no at all. I think, you know, if you could have LA Knight as a face, you could have him as a heel. I even think, call me crazy, LA Knight, I think the way they even they really made Gunther look in the men's rumble, that almost to me signaled a face turn. Everybody was cheering him on, going for him. I know Gunther's not a face by any means, but I think if you really wanted to maybe take a different approach, that could have been a start of a babyface turn right there. But we all know it's probably going to be Gunther versus Sheamus or Gunther versus Drew at Mania for the Intercontinental title. Drew, I hope, doesn't win. I think Gunther should retain either way. But regardless, I think that match will be an absolute brawl. But we got to move on here. You quickly mentioned Alexa Bliss. I don't think she's slated right now for the Elimination Chamber. I think she's going to be the final woman in it. If it's not her, it's Naomi, I believe. I think she's rumored to come back. But this match to me, I mean, I love Bianca Belair. She's one of the better women on the roster. But this run has gotten stale relatively quick just because of the lack of competitors that she has. And I don't know what's going to happen with her at WrestleMania.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. I think with Rhea Ripley winning the Rumble, like I thought Mandy Rose was going to come back and win it. It would have made sense, go after Charlotte. But Rhea Ripley winning, like, that's kind of a surprise that she went after Charlotte. Like, I thought they were going to just keep her on Raw and go after Bianca Belair, but I guess they're doing the rematch from that Performance Center WrestleMania where Rhea lost the NXT title. Makes sense, but it kind of comes off a little predictable. She'll probably take the title and Charlotte will win her 15th title 2 months later and have 16 by the end of the year. So should be a good match regardless, but I think if Naomi's not in it and wins it, like we saw Carmella come back, that could make sense if they build her up more. Asuka, this whole new character that she's bringing back from Japan, she's bringing into WWE. That could be a push that makes sense if she's going to be a heel and they make her really go into that against Bianca Belair. So I'll go with Asuka as the early favorite, but I think there's a few more options for Bianca Belair on the Raw side, which is a positive that we haven't seen in the last few months.
I was going to say, can you bring the Bayley-Becky feud into the title scene, or do you think that's just specifically going to be a one-on-one? But I do agree with you, man. I think Asuka is winning the chamber. If it's not her, I think Bliss still, with what we've seen with the character development, I think there's still unfinished business there. Bianca hasn't seen that character yet. So to me, I think it's either Bliss or Asuka. I think either way, it's going to make Bianca Belair finally have, I think, a refreshing freaking title match. And I mean, do you see, but like I said, like Becky and Bayley, they're two star women that could have their own singles match, but do you think WWE would go the lazy approach and just insert them in the women's title match?
I wouldn't be surprised. Like we're seeing multi-woman matches like
every year.
Yeah. So maybe they see this as like, okay, Rhea's got Charlotte. We'll make them the one-on-one. Like we saw the past few years, like Ronda Rousey involved. I don't think she'll be in the title match. Maybe the women's tag titles, but I don't think it's going to be like a big feud or program like this. Like, what are you going to do with Becky? Like, she's a big star. You have Bayley, you have Damage Control. Like, I think this is just going to be a huge, probably like one of those matches where it's like six women or five women. It's going to be like that fatal four way we saw a few WrestleManias ago with the four horsewomen going at it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go in that approach and do a multi-woman match on night two.
Well, man, we got to quickly talk more about the Women's Rumble quickly. Like, again, Rhea Ripley comes in number one and wins it. She's the first woman to do it. I thought, a lot of bright spots in the women's. I know a lot of people were not impressed with it. I think as the match went on, I think it just got better. The final three for me was perfection. Asuka, Liv Morgan, and Rhea Ripley. I think that's a great final three. You have Liv Morgan playing the wild card beautifully, the underdog, and she came really close. I mean, I thought at times Liv Morgan would have been a right call for her to win. You have her take on Charlotte Flair, and then that's the big test for Liv Morgan at WrestleMania. But we saw Rhea Ripley, obviously. I mean, it was kind of predictable. I hate to say it. She was rumored to win it from, like, November. She comes in and wins it. I thought at times Becky Lynch probably could have won, but when Bayley eliminated her, that was kind of shocking. But at the end of the day, Alino, Rhea Ripley wins it. She's facing Charlotte Flair. I think she's going to win the title at WrestleMania. It's going to be a big coronation, I think, for Rhea Ripley. A long time coming. Just a hell of a talent. But Alino, I got to ask you this, because we saw a new character in Asuka. We saw you wanted Mandy Rose at number 30. We got somebody else. We got Nia Jax at 30. What was your reaction initially when you saw this? And the blunder with the countdown. What the hell was that?
Yeah, the music played. I'm like, I thought originally she was just interfering because I didn't see a countdown. Like, they didn't play anything, just her music. So I thought, okay, it's an interference. She's returning, but she's not in the match. Then they had the countdown thing go off. Like, I don't know what they were doing backstage, but that was a letdown. I'm not going to lie. Like, coming in at 30, like, wasn't expecting that. I thought someone was going to get hurt in there. Like, she hasn't been in the ring in a while, so I thought maybe she's going to punch someone in the face by accident, like, a little too hard, and we're going to have another Becky Lynch situation, but thankfully that didn't happen. It was kind of like when Big Show is in those rumbles, like, everybody teams up to eliminate her, so that made sense, but I don't think they needed to have her at 30. Like, if they wanted to do that spot, you could have had her come in at, like, number 10, number 13, I think the 30 spot should have been saved for like a surprise like that, or build something long term. Like, that didn't make sense. The whole thing was botched too, so that didn't help. But yeah, I don't know how long, if it's going to be like an actual return full time or just like a one off. But like, even Michelle McCool was an interesting one. I thought there were moments where she could have made a run there, but I think they protected a lot of characters in this. Like, when Rhea won, it was through the mist. Like, Liv Morgan got blinded by that mist, and I think that's what helped her. So it protects a final two. It keeps Asuka's character strong. It keeps Rhea Ripley strong, and it keeps Liv strong. So the benefit of that and the positive of that match is that you have like five strong characters, even in a loss, that could do something at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I agree. Perfectly said. I think those three are in for a bright 2023, specifically Liv Morgan. I thought, you know, when she beat Rhea Ripley, Ronda Rousey for the title, and she held it for a bit, I thought, you know, that was kind of maybe a one-off. Like, she's still really green. She has improved. But then you look at what she did here at the Rumble. It's like, okay, no, they're all in with Liv Morgan. I think she's going to be a big-time player for a while. She's a wild card. She's like what Carmella was a couple of years ago in 2018 when she had the women's title and you didn't really know what you were getting with Carmella. With now with Liv Morgan, another year of development, I think she's just been absolutely knocking it out the park every single feud. But Alina, when I saw Liv Morgan and Nia Jax in the same ring, I'm like, please don't hurt her. Don't have this girl break her neck, be out for, you know, 10 months. This is a superstar in the making in Liv Morgan. And we saw it here at the Rumble, man. To me, she had one of the brighter performances, just like Gunther in the men's. But we got to end it with the main event because, dude, that was dramatic as hell. I mean, the match to me was a little underwhelming. I thought, if you compare it to the Rumble match they had 2 years ago, that one was way better. But call me crazy, man. Like, no one really – it sucks because we said it last week. Kevin Owens is never a filler guy. But as soon as his entrance came out and then Roman came out and Sammy came with him alone, I knew that there was literally no attention on Kevin Owens throughout the match. It was always, what is Sami Zayn going to do? When is he going to do it? When's Roman going to turn on him? And little do we know, we saw Sami Zayn finally turn on Roman Reigns the same fashion that Seth Rollins did to Roman. So it comes full circle. Roman still hasn't gotten over that betrayal by Seth Rollins. So what were your thoughts on this, Alino? I love the segment more than the match, to be honest with you. I thought the match was fine. It had a couple violent spots, especially with the steps at the end there. But I thought this really, really boded well for a guy like Sami Zayn here, where, you know, we're waiting and waiting and waiting for Roman to turn, but it was the other way around. So what were your thoughts on it? Do you think this really benefits Sami Zayn, and do you think he's going to get his moment at WrestleMania?
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of the Kofi Kingston run. Like, the least expected thing happens, and the crowd, everybody goes and rallies behind a guy that they want to see win the title. And I think we're seeing it here with Sami Zayn. This whole run with Roman, and since they started teasing that they were going to break up from or break Sami out of the group there and turn on him, we saw Sami have enough of what Roman was doing to KO and hits him with the chair. And I think the biggest surprise is Jey Uso. He just left, and Jimmy is the one that you would think, because he was closer with Sami Zayn this whole time, and Solo Sikoa obviously doing what Roman does, says to do, and Jay leaving kind of makes things interesting, because main event Jey Uso, what he was in the early stages of that COVID Thunderdome era. So if they go and give Jey Uso a big push down the line, this could be interesting for everybody. Sami Zayn now, hey, he gets his big match in Montreal with Roman. The whole time, though, as this was going on, I don't know why I kept thinking The Rock was coming out, though, just to throw a wrench in all the plans. And I thought they could have done something here where The Rock just comes out and Jey Uso just doesn't leave with Roman. He stays in the ring, and they could have done something like that. But I think this is leading to something with The Rock after WrestleMania. Maybe he comes out, him and Roman set something up for next year's WrestleMania like you did with Cena, and you have Cody as champion. Hopefully Sami Zayn's involved at WrestleMania in a big match. And I'd like to see what happens now with Jey Uso. This could be interesting.
I think, you know, what we talk more and more about here is I remember we mentioned this maybe November. You said that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens will be lined up to face the Usos at WrestleMania for the tag titles. But now, what we saw with Jey Uso basically, you know, not helping out the bloodline, walking out. I don't know if the Usos will be tag champs much longer, to be honest with you. I think there might be something going down where maybe Solo takes Jay's spot as the tag champ. I don't know if that's even allowed, but I think that might be a thing here. But it makes it a lot more interesting with Kevin Owens' road to WrestleMania, Sami Zayn's road to WrestleMania, and Jey Uso's road to WrestleMania, because you don't really know what Jey Uso can bring to the table. I mean, is he a tag team wrestler? He could be a single star. We saw it in 2020. But I don't know what this feud is going to be with Jay. I don't know if he's feuding with Solo down the line, if it's Roman Reigns, if it's his own brother. Like, we have no idea what it's going to be at WrestleMania, because, dude, I think when push comes to shove, and I hate to say this because it's just been dominated by big Reigns, I think we're going to get a Braun Strowman Ricochet tag team title run at some point, because they're throwing them down our throats every single week. Unless they're really going to go with Braun versus Ricochet, I don't see that really boding well for either superstar. So I think you get the Street Profits maybe winning, or you get Braun and Ricochet, because, dude, now with Jey Uso not helping out the bloodline, I think this opens up a lot more singles opportunities for everybody involved. And I think Jey Uso, we saw in 2020, he could be a primetime player in the singles on a singles run. So we'll see with that, but we'll talk more about it next week. More wrestling. We did see, though, I want to bring it up. Last night's SmackDown, we saw Sami Zayn come out, attack Roman Reigns, spear him. I think this match, Alino, call me crazy, I see Roman Reigns still beating him here. I know there's a lot of people out there that think Sami Zayn is going to win the title at the Elimination Chamber, maybe in a screw job fashion where maybe there's a miscommunication with the ref and they say, yeah, no, it was for the Universal title. It wasn't for the WWE title. And then maybe we see a complete downward spiral from Roman where he also loses at Mania to Cody for one title. But I don't know, man. I just think Roman Reigns, I think he's going to retain here. I think we might see Sami Zayn come up short. Maybe we see Jey Uso turn on Sami Zayn at the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, that crowd's going to be crazy. Just that whole match, I think, is going to be worth it. Whatever they do, like, the crowd's going to be involved right from the start, so they won't have to worry about that. I think that's going to have like a WrestleMania main event feel to it at Elimination Chamber.
Now, here's another intriguing thing I want to say before we go off. Do you think there is a possibility that we see, instead of, I know this is definitely not going to bode well with fans, but do you think we, like, it would be big enough if we were to see a Jey Uso versus Sami Zayn match at WrestleMania, or do you think that's not good enough?
I think if Jey Uso was the one that super kicked him at Royal Rumble, that would have been perfect. Like, that would have been, okay, Sami Zayn's not, he didn't win the Rumble. He wasn't in the match. He gets out of the bloodline. He's going to have a match with Roman, but they can still have something there for WrestleMania. I think that would have been best case scenario, but I think with him walking out, not really wanting to be part of the bloodline now and kind of siding with Sami Zayn a little bit, I don't think it would be the same. It might take away from it if they did that. Like, I think Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn might be a tag team at WrestleMania, unfortunately. And this was a big match, though. They could have done Sami versus Roman WrestleMania. I think it would have made sense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hate on Cody Rhodes at all. I just think, you know, you look at him coming out at 30 and winning the Rumble and almost the fans turning on him just based on Gunther's performance. If you're Cody Rhodes, it's kind of frustrating because he was off for so long and he had a phenomenal feud with Seth Rollins last year. And it is a long time coming. I've said this since, remember when he got fired in like 2013? I said, like, Cody Rhodes is bound to be a main event star in WWE. And he comes back and he's Stardust and there's all this stuff. And then he goes and he hammers the throne in AEW and then he comes back. And it's just like one of those things where it's like, okay, Cody Rhodes, he's bound to win the title eventually. But at this point in time, just the way the Bloodline storyline has been, it's just like you said, they back themselves in a corner. And it's kind of like what we saw at WrestleMania 30, man. Like, I know they were really keen on Dave Bautista to win the title and beat Randy Orton, but it's like, nope, Daniel Bryan, is the guy now, and we have to give what the fans want. So Aulino, you know what? I still don't think it's going to be a tag team at WrestleMania. I think at some point in time, we might see a triple threat. We might see Sammy, Cody, and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I think that would be an ideal matchup for the WWE Universe. What do you think about that?
I like it. I think it keeps everyone happy. If you have a creative finish, it could go over well. It's just another thing with WWE, like, when would you introduce The Rock into the whole thing? Would you do it at WrestleMania, have him as a special enforcer, or just come out after the match and just hit Roman with the Rock Bottom? Or do you do it night after WrestleMania when Roman's cutting a promo, he's all upset at what happened, and he comes in to spoil the party?
Probably the Monday, because we all know Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar made his return in 2012. We've seen so many monumental returns. So I like that idea, man. I think you get the triple threat of Mania, you give the fans what they want, and then the next night you give fans what they want, and you have The Rock come out, and I don't know if he'll rock bottom him, or maybe he'll just cut an infuriating promo on Roman saying how, I used to love you like a brother, and now look at you. You think you're me. You think you're better than me, and I'm the guy that brought everyone together, and you're trying to just... They could talk about the island of relevancy and all that, and I think at the end of the day, it's all ego. You know, you have Rock and Roman, two big egos right there going at it. I think Roman would have to go over, though, man. I hate to say it.
Would be interesting. The bloodline, like who the real leader of the bloodline is, we find out. Roman, I don't know how they can creatively, like, have them all together in the match, like Cody and Sammy. Like, this is going to be tough, but it's they tough. Booked themselves in this corner. They could have had Sammy in the Rumble and win it. Would have been easy, but now it's going to be, they're going to be criticized either way now.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, again, like we mentioned before the pod, I'll quickly say this, like Rey Mysterio didn't come out. I thought when that spot happened, I'm like, okay, Sami Zayn has to take a spot, or maybe The Rock or Stone Cold. Somebody has to come out here. And we got Logan Paul at 27, and then Cody at 30. And those are like the two monumental, I guess, surprises here. But Cody wasn't a surprise. He was advertised for the match. But I thought the pay-per-view was phenomenal. I think, like you mentioned, we said it perfectly. They put themselves in a corner with Cody winning. So much attention on Sami Zayn in the pay-per-view. I think, especially the ending, dude, it just takes away from Cody's win even more with Sami, because everyone's talking about Sami Zayn. No one's talking about Cody Rhodes winning the Royal Rumble here. But we got to see what happens at WrestleMania, man, and even at the Chamber, because this is going to be a fun road to WrestleMania, as it was when Kofi went and when Daniel Bryan went. So it's going to be unpredictable. It's going to be fun. And hopefully The Rock doesn't put a damper in any of the plans for Sami Zayn. So with that being said, this is episode 206. Chris Martelli, Giancarlo Aulino, signing out.